Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Conscious Thought with Leo on BBS Radio Talk Show, and I'm your host, Magdalena Winkler. Well, thank you very much, everybody, for tuning in, and I'm very excited for tonight. Again, we have a lovely guest, but before we actually interview our guest or call him in, I would just like everybody to know, please, if you have question for me or Kevin, you can call us in on 1-888-627-6008. Again, 1-888-627-6008. That's behind us. And so let's welcome our guest for tonight. But please help me welcome Kevin Hankin from Maine. Good evening, Kevin.
Hello, Magdalena. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you. Listen, I so appreciate that you actually became my guest because it's very emotional for me, folks. I just wanted to let everybody know. Tonight, it will be very emotional for me because Kevin is from Maine and I lived over there. And so I'm very familiar with the area and went through a lot of healing. So anyway, so in case that, you know, I start to kind of choke and you know, be emotional. So anyway, let's introduce Kevin for tonight. Kevin is actually a president of the Hancock Lumber Company, established 1848. It's actually a family company, correct, Kevin?
That's correct, yes.
And what I'm amazed about, you have actually 460 employees. That's pretty amazing, pretty nice company. And look, like I said, I've been also actually lived in Maine. So Maine people are very, they are very hardworking people. So I like that about that. And they have a great reputation about that. So tonight, actually, we will introduce Kevin, your book, Not For Sale, Finding Center in the Land of Crazy Horse. What is this actually exactly about? Tell us your story. As a businessman, how did it ended up to be on the Soul Quest?
Yeah, that's a great question. My book chronicles a series of events that came into my life that I never could have anticipated. I ended up taking over the leadership of our company at a pretty young age when my dad died. I was 31 years old at the time. That was around 1998. In 2008, I had a evolutionary astrology reading done. I had never heard of evolutionary astrology prior to being given the reading as a gift, but I listened to my reading and it really kind of rocked me awake and made me really stop and think and look inward. In that reading, I learned that I was a triple Aries, that I had lots of caretaker energy, and that I had lots of love for others, but sometimes more in a global way than being able to connect on an individual soul to soul way, and that under duress I could get pretty dogmatic, and that in my immediate past life I had been a leader of a tribe and lost myself, my sense of self, in my role as leader, and that in this lifetime I was essentially here to try again, Magdalena, to see if I could learn to lead differently, to see if I could gain a deeper sense of self outside of my public roles that I played. So that was kind of the first thing that that started my awakening. And then in 2010, two things happened. One, the economy, the housing and mortgage market collapse was really at its peak. And so
I was actually in Maine when that happened. So this is why I said to you, it is very emotional because I could relate to that. I left Maine in 2009, so I was there. I knew how difficult it was.
Right. I love that we were here at the same time,
yes.
Even though we didn't know each other then. Mm-hmm. So that it was a very stressful time for the business, and during that period in 2010, Magdalena, I began to have trouble speaking. When I went to talk, all the muscles in my throat would spasm and squeeze and contract, and my voice could get very broken and strained and weak and hard to hear. So after going to a bunch of doctors, I finally was diagnosed with spasmodic dysphonia, which is a very rare neurological disorder that affects only speech with no known cause and no known cure. So I found myself at the peak of the housing market crisis trying to help lead a lumber company without consistently being able to talk. Yes. Yeah. And I can laugh about that now, but it wasn't very funny at the time. It really scared me and I didn't know what to do.
Mm-hmm. I think this is actually what actually created all this condition, what you were dealing with. Don't you think that high stress?
I do. I actually I came to believe that it was my my soul's way of getting my attention. When I thought back to my evolutionary astrology reading and how under stress I could become dogmatic, and how I had all this caretaker energy, feeling responsibility for the tribe, that now I was back in a situation where my tribe was under duress, and I'd started to go mm-hmm. back to those traditional, safe modes of leadership, and my soul didn't want to go that way, and taking away my voice was its loving way to wake me up.
Well, you know, also, Kevin, what is interesting, you know, being a triple Aries for you, that was maybe very hard to lose the control.
Correct. It was, and I think it's why the loss of my voice was such an appropriate
knock you out.
Yeah, because I had no choice but to share responsibility, yes. Magdalena, because what it becomes quite simple when you can't always talk, you listen. I got really, really good in a hurry at listening and sitting and being quiet, asking questions, answering a question with a question, inviting others around me to lead, eventually inviting everyone around me to lead, and in short order, miraculously, I could see that actually worked better, not only for those around me, but for myself. It was a more powerful way to lead, and it was a more balanced way for me to live. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, so... Sorry.
You know what is amazing? No. What is amazing to me, you know, this is why I was intrigued, actually, not just intrigued. I was very much touched with your story because, you know, having a 460s employee and, you know, having this huge company behind your back and having to take care about, it's not easy to kind of go on this journey and say, okay, now I will now take care about myself. And you guys just, you are on your own. You know what I'm saying? This is a humongous challenge for the personality to give over to the soul.
It was a very difficult step for me to take, especially yes. in my case with responsibility for a company that had my mm-hmm. name on it, my family's name on it, going back six generations to 1848. But in 2012, I could see that the economy had stabilized and that our company was well on its way to being healthy and strong again. And as you just spoke to, Magdalene, I had this growing sensation within me that it was time to serve myself a little bit more, to find my balance and search for my voice. And I didn't know how I was going to do that, but I could feel that need or urge. And that summer, I was in an airport with my wife, Allison. I picked up mm-hmm. a copy of National Geographic magazine, and the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation was the cover story. And when I opened the magazine and read that story, it was as if the story came out of the magazine, hugged me,
and talked to you.
Pulled me in, yes. And I finished the story, and with no more thought than that, Magdalena, I said to my wife, Allison, I'm going to go there. I want to see what modern day life is like for the people that live there. And a few months later, there I was, and over time, one trip became 9. I was just there for the 9th time this spring, and a journal that I was keeping when I started became the basis for my book, Not for Sale.
You know what was amazing? I mean, I have to tell you, I was very much intrigued that, you know, you had an unbelievable support system from your family and from your company or employees. That is such amazing, because that was, you know, in today's age, Kevin, that where we are dealing, a computer, too much information, and everybody is just kind of running stress, high stress, and everything else. Nobody has a time for anybody, okay? And having that kind of support, I felt just pretty amazing. And it's hugely important when you're going through this kind of crisis.
No, when I think about that, that makes me want to cry, because it is the it was the gift that released me. I dedicated my book to my wife Allison, because she saw that something powerful and valuable and meaningful was unfolding for me, and she kept encouraging me to go back, to keep visiting, to keep writing, and to take that risk and write with her. Our two daughters were the same way. My mom was the same way. And then, too, everybody at Hancock Lumber was there for me, too. And I was really blessed to have that much support for a journey that was quite atypical or non-traditional for a business CEO in the middle of his career.
Well, thank you. That's exactly what I was so intrigued by this whole thing, because look like, I was thinking, you know, this whole thing, this is not just a simple story. This is a story of the soul journey for a businessman. And now how do you explain this in the 21st century to somebody? when the majority, you know, people are kind of so intellectually, you know, oriented. So talking about soul journey, what are you talking about? But yeah, that's actually the tipping point in today's society, what we are looking for.
No, that's such a great point. And that that's exactly right. It was the beginning of a transformation that my soul wanted to make, and I believe humanity collectively wants to make, from living with our heads to living with our hearts. And
absolutely, thank you.
It made me really nervous, Magdalena, at first, to wonder and worry about what others who were watching might think. But the pull of that journey was so strong.
You know, and men don't cry. Men don't go on journey. That's what is so amazing. So I have to, you know, congratulate for you and being that open and honest and go into this intimate details in your book. That takes a courage.
Yeah, and especially, coming from a kind of a rugged individualist place like Maine, and coming from the, a very traditional kind of macho industry like the lumber industry, it's it was almost right out of central casting that it all happened that way.
Yeah.
But it did. That's what happened.
I know that. So Maine is changing, I have to say that.
Well, I think the world is wanting to change,
exactly.
And that's really the essence of my book. And I also think that it's why it's such a transformational or tumultuous time when you look around the world today, because there's an old order trying to preserve itself, but increasingly, one soul at a time, a new order is wanting to awaken.
Well, also, Kevin, I think, you know, I mean, I started maybe around 28 or 30 years ago on my journey. And so, you know, at the time, we had very few people who were, you know, going on the soul quest and stuff. And today, I would say we have more and more people, and we are kind of getting more organized, and we can support other people, you know. And for today, people who are waking up, for them, it's much easier, because they have much more support than what I had 30 years ago.
Right. Agreed. Agreed. And one thing that I found so interesting, Magdalena, at Pine Ridge was that in the ancient traditions and wisdom of the Lakota, I actually found the path forward for me in the present day and what I came to believe was a possible path forward for humanity. The Lakota have seven sacred rites that were brought to them.
I love that.
That were brought to them long ago, as they tell the story, by the white buffalo calf woman. And one of those rites many people would have heard of, it was the vision quest, or as the Lakota call it, Hamble Chia, which translated means to cry for a vision. And in the vision quest rite, young people coming of age or adults at a transformational moment in their lives would leave their tribe and sequester themselves alone with nature for the purpose of seeking a vision, stopping, listening, sensing one's connectivity to all living things, and looking inward for your own personal source of truth. And then you were expected to return to your tribe, share what you had learned about the essence of who you were, and live your life in accordance with your own personal truth. And the communal notion was that if each individual was living their own personal sense of truth, then the tribe would be strong. It was, to me, right out of Rudyard Kipling's The Jungle Book, the strength of the pack is the wolf.
Are you there?
Yes.
Maybe we're breaking up a little. Yeah, that's so true. Mm-hmm. And so practically, when you were there, the question was, what brought you there? That was the question that actually broke me.
Right.
I broke down and cried for three days. So tell us about the things, what brought you here?
Right. It's the first sentence of my book, as you know. I was standing at the Wounded Knee Massacre site on the second night of my first visit, and an old jewelry maker came up and said, "What brings you here?" And I leaned in with a big smile and said, "That is a great question." And it took me six trips before I knew the answer, but I now do. I was searching. I was doing that universally human thing. I was searching for my voice, both literally and spiritually, ironically, in a place where no one felt heard, in a community that felt lost, forgotten, and marginalized.
Well, this is so beautiful, Kevin, when you're saying in your book, where you're saying in the book is that, I lost my voice, but I find the voice for others. How powerful is that?
Right. Eventually, I came to realize that I was on my own vision quest, and one specific morning, alone in the Black Hills with the buffalo and the blowing golden grass, that vision came to me, and it was powerful in its simplicity. The vision was that the partial loss of my voice, which up until then I'd only thought of as a disability or a problem or a hindrance, was actually a blessing and a calling and an opportunity to strengthen, to do what I could to strengthen the voices of others, in part through stopping, sitting still, looking inward, and strengthening my own voice on a spiritual level. And once that calling or vision hit me, it just released a whole new set of possibilities in my life for how I thought of myself and how I thought of leadership.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm in healing for over 20 years. And for me, always, you know, the personal journey is hugely important. And what I recognized in your story, too, is that how your own journey was actually intertwined with a collective collective journey, because you journeying your own soul and finding your voice, you actually were able to transcend to your company, but also help to the Lakota people with that.
Correct. I thought about that two ways. That back within my role at Hancock Lumber, the opportunity became really powerful when I thought about it. What if we could create an organization where everybody led, where everybody felt that their voice mattered, was important, was heard, was respected and trusted? Wouldn't an organization where everybody led outperform and have more social, spiritual value than a traditional organization where just a few people held all the cards, did all the speaking, and made all the decisions? And I was almost giddy with the potential of that new idea, because it just changed the very dynamic, the core dynamic of what a company could do and be about to me.
But I'm sure also it changed the energy actually between your employee, or the energy between you and your employees.
It did. You're so you're so soulful and perceptive. I'm so glad I'm connected to you, because that's exactly what happened.
Listen, I lived in Maine.
It sounds too simple to be true, but what I saw, Magdalena, is what you're speaking to. When I changed in very short order,
everybody changed.
The entire dynamic of how people related to each other changed in just a matter of years. And it all started with me looking inward. And it reminds me, I have the sign now up in our conference room, that famous simple quote, "Be the change you want to see in others." There's so much truth in that. Earlier in my career, I used to spend a lot of time worrying about what other people should do or how they should act. And that never got me anywhere. And the minute I just turned my focus inward and became the person I really was meant to be, or at least started heading in that direction.
Be the change you want to see in the world, huh?
Yes, exactly. It was so powerful. I couldn't really believe it, that it was actually happening. And then for the people, of Pine Ridge, the opportunity there was simple too, that through my book, but more importantly, just through my time with them, being there, acknowledging them, listening to them, enjoying, appreciating, and respecting them, I felt that I was helping to revive a once powerful voice in this community that had been historically, systematically, for generations, beaten down and had their voice taken away, if you will.
Well, not just that, Kevin. Oh, my God. Now it breaks my heart. When I was reading the part where you were saying, you know, the Lakota, by the Lakota tribes, that's the purest place, in the U.S. And when you were comparing that, when you are a teenager in Maine, everybody works. Well, I can relate to that. And trust me, my daughter would say, oh, yeah. He's right about that one. She had to work at a young age after college immediately, or in the school breaks. Yeah, everybody works. It's just the nature of the, I mean, nobody's asking anything. You know that you have to do it, period. You're not questioning that.
No, that's right.
So that was pretty, you know, as you are saying, you know, these are the simplistic, you know, aspect, but they are so powerful. And I love you. I saw on one of your email, it says best place to work.
Yeah, correct. One of the results of the change in the way we approach leadership is our company's now 2 years in a row been selected as a best place to work in Maine, which is a very, very difficult status to
reach,
because primarily because what I love about it, Magdalena, is the criteria is all based on third-party administered employee engagement surveys. So winning the award has nothing to do with example with me giving a speech about why Hancock Lumber is a great place to work. It's all based on the employees describing themselves as being highly engaged and committed to and into the company and the work that that they do there. But I wanted to go. I do want to go back to Pine Ridge too, because the other thing that, that really struck me the first time I was there, like a ton of bricks, was the realization that Columbus did not actually discover a new world, that people already lived here, and that there were communities in this country that had not yet recovered from Manifest Destiny or the winning of the West or even Columbus's discovery. And I majored in history in college. I taught history after I graduated, and somehow that truth that was so obvious, I'd never really come to terms with before. And it really made me think how an entire culture or country could take a part of its historic fabric and push it to the side and not really acknowledge it. And I came to believe that for healing to occur, one of the necessary steps is confronting the cold, hard reality of our truth on a personal level, a family level, a tribal level, or a national level.
I'm glad you are actually coming with all the points that actually I highlighted. I wanted to talk about too, because the reason why, because it struck me when you said, you know, you have to revisit, you have to go back, revisit practically the past so that you can move actually into the future.
Correct. So I came to believe that that going backwards is moving forward. And I had a big smile this afternoon when I was looking on your website, because a lot of the key bullet points that you use to describe the essence of your show are actually those same points. For example, learning why we repeat cycles or patterns and how to consciously face
become aware of it. Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Because I've also come to believe that to say it differently, that history lives. History matters because it lives. An event does not end when the day is over. And there are people in this country, in communities like Pine Ridge, that are still reconciling events that took place as far back as the 19th century.
Whew, okay, we are getting emotional. Okay, this is what I wanted to ask you. Oh, that really touched me. It says, there is no present or future, only the past happening over and over again now.
There's a riddle that I opened my book with that goes like this. Winds in the east, mists coming in, like something is brewing and about to begin. Can't put me finger on what lies in store, but I think what's to happen all happened before. that is Bert from Mary Poppins. But when I read that timeless passage, it stopped me in my tracks because it reminded me exactly of what I was experiencing on a personal level at Pine Ridge and what I saw that community dealing with as well, that until history is acknowledged, reconciled, apologized, and forgiven, it's not transcended. And the cycles repeat themselves. And there's an energy field there that you know so well. So much of your work is dedicated to it that has to be released. And it takes both sides of the conflict to reconnect and to sit quietly and look at that truth in order for that reconciliation and release to happen. And it's so easy to say, well, I wasn't alive then, or I didn't do that, so it's not my responsibility, or it's not my problem. But that's not right. That's just not right. We are a single human tribe, and we share responsibility for helping each other confront and transcend the past and evolve.
I so agree with it, because when I was reading your apology, this is when I recognized, oh my God, this book cannot be read in 3 days, 3 weeks. It takes over and over and over, especially if you are emotionally connected to that. And also what I recognize, Kevin, is in reading the book, you were talking about about the astrology, evolutionary astrology, about the energies, you know, being in our voice and transmitting from the past. I wanted to just to add that this is exactly the same thing happening in your book. I was picking up the energies. That's why I recognized. That's where I was so emotionally connected, because I was reading the quotes from the words.
Right. There's a what was for me a very powerful moment in my journey when I was driving through the Black Hills when it hit me. I wanted to say I was sorry, and I cried when I did, and I'm almost tearing up now as I relive that again. Even though I was not there, I was not there 130 years ago when the transgressions were started. But I wanted to apologize. I wanted the people of Pine Ridge to understand that I know the truth. I know what happened. I know we overreached on the way to creating a great nation, and I know the suffering and the pain that did cause and is still causing.
It's still causing, exactly.
Present day. And I cannot erase the past, but I can acknowledge it, and I can say, I'm sorry. And I think the act of apologizing is more powerful than we might realize.
I so agree with you, because I did a lot of personal growth and development seminars in Maine, and we did a lot of this kind of, you know, type apologizing and, you know, forgiveness and all this thing. And I know how powerful that is. So it really brought me back to those days when I was experiencing that. And it just really touched me. And another thing is what it really touched me also. And I would actually kind of like to bring this even on the air. When you said, how about if that apology would go viral, if thousands and thousands of people would sign apology for the Lakota people. And I would say this, Karen, I would encourage our listeners to get in touch with you if they're interested, you know, to add to the list the apology and send, you know, to the Lakota people. I would encourage them.
Oh, bless you. And that is what I did. If you go, anyone that's interested can contact me, or if you go to my website, which is www.kevin kevindhancock.com, kevindhancock.com. On that site, you will find that apology that that I first wrote by hand on the side of the road in the Black Hills that morning when it hit me, that I which then went into my book, and then I decided I wanted to share it because one of my one of the things that would make me the happiest would be to see thousands and thousands, if not hundreds of thousands or millions of people sign that apology. And I think the sign on to sharing in that apology. And I think the power of that back to the people of Pine Ridge and the other reservation communities of this country could be very powerful, because I really do believe there are hundreds of millions of people who are sorry.
You know what, as I'm listening to you, you know what, we can actually talk more about this offline later on, but maybe we can actually bring this viral on the Facebook.
That would be fantastic. I would love that.
Yeah, you know, it's, you know, we are not pushing everybody, but if people feel, you know, touched, you know, in their hearts, you know, apology doesn't cost anything. But I think that would shift hugely the energy what's really going. I mean, just, you know, I'm telling you, it's not just the book that touched me, but also that reminds me what I realized. Those people, they were suffering and they're still, you know, dealing with the consequences. And we are actually dealing in the entire world with much more consequences. And I realized not much changed, actually, Kevin, even though we are in the 21st century. Isn't that sad?
Correct. The story has repeated itself over and over again.
Yes.
And I could see it in the extreme example that is Pine Ridge. But throughout time, the tribe that has been the biggest and the strongest and the most powerful has often overreached, gone too far, and exploited other tribes that at that time had less power. And there's no victory in that. There is no victory in overreaching. And it came back to the loss of my voice and thinking differently about leadership, and that's when the notion hit me, Magdalena, that perhaps in the Aquarian age, the new key word or trait of leaders is restraint, which is holding the power, having the power, but not using it.
Not abusing it.
And giving a voice back to everyone. There's no victory. There's no victory in overreaching. And you see that on these reservations today, that neither the victor or the vanquished wins. Nobody wins. And until those past transgressions are truly reconciled at a heartfelt soul's level, there is no amount of policy or legislation or government or money that can fix it. It's, you cannot fix it with laws or money. It's got to be fixed on a soul's level. And this is that transformation that our country needs to make, and much of the planet does as well, which is to go from living with our heads to living with our hearts.
Absolutely. Kevin, I would like to ask you, is there anything you would like to share about Pine Ridge? Or would you like to actually go into the meaning of the book? Why did you use the title Not For Sale?
Sure, that's a fun one. And people have joked with me about this, Magdalena. Sometimes people have seen the title Not For Sale and said with a smile, "Oh, that's so nice of you, Kevin. The book is free." and then I feel bad and I have to explain, no, the book's not free. The title has some deep symbolic meaning, some for me and some for the Lakota. For me, it was simple. I was no longer willing or desired to just be defined as a business leader. I still love my business role, and I take it seriously and I'm into it, but it's not who I am. It's a role I play. And I wanted to see myself more broadly. So in that respect, I am not for sale. I just didn't want to be about money or global business conquest. And then for the people of Pine Ridge, it represents a critical part of their story. So the as late as 1868, the Lakota were guaranteed their land forever, as Black Elk would say, as long as grass shall grow and water shall flow, this land will be ours. But in 1874, gold was discovered in the Black Hills, and the treaty was broken, and the land was taken. Around the 1930s, the Sioux began to file a series of lawsuits against the federal government for the taking of their land. And as you can imagine, they were thrown out of court and defeated, but they kept going, and in 1980 ended up before the U.S. Supreme Court in a very famous case that gives me goosebumps to think about, titled the Sioux Nation of Indians versus the United States. And the Supreme Court sided with the Sioux and said that the government in the 1870s had violated the Fifth Amendment rights of the Sioux by taking their land without just compensation. So the government then went back and valued the land as of the 1870s, compounded the interest to the present day, and awarded the Sioux something like $120 million, which is comical, not in a great way, because that was basically for the entire state of North Dakota, South Dakota, Wyoming, and Montana. It was a massive territory. And the Sioux's response, though, this is the part that gives me goosebumps. They essentially went before the Supreme Court judges and said, "No, you don't understand, Your Honors. Our land's not for sale, and they will not take the money." That money to the present day sits in trust. It's valued at over $1 billion today, and they won't take it because the principle is more important to them than the money. And so they, too, are not for sale. In addition to that, their economic conditions today are so challenged that very little is for sale there. Unemployment runs between 80 and 90%, and there's very, very little economic activity on the reservation. And so in that context, the title not for sale also fit.
Wow. Pretty powerful. The reason why, because I'm just thinking about that, Kevin, everybody would make the same statement in so many aspects in our lives that we are not for sale, everything would look different or everything would change.
Right. The Lakota used to call gold, which is what was driving the land taking on the Northern Plains, the Lakota term for gold was the yellow metal that makes the white people crazy. And, you know, for me, because I know what good businesses can do, the value they bring, and that part of me does believe in capitalism, but it's all about balance, Magdalena.
Balance,
right?
Yes.
It's all about balance, and it's not about more money for the sake of more money or more money at any cost. It's about pursuing activity with a purpose, which to me, if you pursue your business activity with a purpose, the odds are high that the business performance will be better anyway, but you set the business up in a manner designed to benefit everyone that is a stakeholder in it.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Kevin, we have maybe around 10, 12 minutes. I'm so sorry. this is what I would like to ask. I would really ask you to let us know the lesson learned and how did you implement it in your business. And at the end, I would love you to give us what's next for you and also how can people get in touch where they can find your book.
Perfect.
So it gives you an idea.
Yeah, so the lesson learned, there are so many for me, but I guess at the core
of it is, major ones,
yeah,
major
at the core of it is the notion that that we all come from a tribe. We're all born in a house, if you will, on a street, in a town, in a community, at a moment in time, and that tribe pulls on us. It has a dogma and a set of expectations. It pulls on us to think a certain way and do certain things, but that each soul is here to individuate, to find their own personal truth, to awaken from unconscious to conscious, and that in a world where tribes' dogma can be loud and aggressive and intimidating, and in a world that can be very, very busy, where people don't have the time, if they're not careful, to stop and think and look inward, it's possible to live an entire life without searching for the real truth of why you, at a soul's level, are here. So the first lesson was making the time to stop, listen to the soul, leave the head on the shelf for a minute and look inward. And then what came
Listen,
out of
I
that?
I always say, use them head, play a manager, but it's not the boss.
Yes, I love that. I love that. And then the second part of that learning was that when we serve ourselves that way, we actually are strengthening our tribe and helping those around us, and that ironically, counterintuitively, being selfish is selfless. For when we find our truth, our voice, we light up like a giant happy morning sun in a way that we can't help but infect others in a real positive way, and that the stronger we make ourselves, the more valuable we do become to others, and that it's this notion that you should always, always sacrifice yourself for others is understandable, necessary at times or moments in time, but not designed to be the way one should live an entire life, because you're going to miss your own gift and calling if you're not careful.
Your soul journey.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Are you there?
I am. I'm right here. What do you want me to talk about next?
Where people can find your book.
Yes. Okay. So there are a bunch of places you can find my book. It's available on Amazon and at many bookstores. But my personal favorite place to find the book is right on the book's website, www.kevindhancock.com, because there are so many other resources on that website and links and information. And in addition, I see all the orders placed on that site and I sign those orders personally.
Okay.
And then in terms of, I think you'd, what's next? Was that the other question?
Yes. What's next for Kevin?
Yeah, so this is the part that makes me light up, Magdalena. I don't know, and I'm totally or largely comfortable with that. The old me would have needed to have a list and a plan and been certain about what was next, and the new me is much more inclined to flow and to be comfortable not knowing what's next, and to simply try to be really awake, alive, present, listening to my feelings and watching what comes my way. I told my daughters the other day to try to be alert every moment as you live your life, because your future just got on the train with you. It just bumped into you coming out of the elevator. He or she is beside you in line getting coffee. You know, those opportunities surround us, but it is so easy to get so busy and consumed with our heads that we don't see that. So I'm trying to live comfortably with the fun opportunity of not being sure what's next.
That's very realistic, because, you know, we never know what's really going on, happen to tomorrow. You know, that's why, you know, they are saying, you know, living in the moment is the best one.
Right. No, exactly. And the other thing I am trying to do is make time to be available to follow the book. People ask me, how are you going about marketing the book or promoting the book? And I just don't see it that way, and I don't feel it that way. The book to me is more...
It's a storytelling.
It's more something I want to share, the mm-hmm. sharing of a story, and I'm just making time to be available for wonderful people just like yourself who run into it and it speaks to them, and I want to have time to be available to connect with those people and see where it takes me.
So are you more interested to go on the shows to talk about, or are you planning maybe a road trip?
Yeah, I'm doing some of that. I'm really interested in sharing the book with native communities. There's a big conference coming up in September involving essentially the chief financial officers from all of the native tribes in the United States. And I got asked to speak at their conference, and I'm really excited about the opportunity.
Where is that, Kevin?
To connect with them. That's going to be in Charlotte, North Carolina in September.
Jesus Christ. Don. Listen, I may play for that one. The reason why I'm asking you this, because just before I met, you know, before I got the information from the book, I was actually on the event, Pachamama event. I don't know, are you familiar with that? It's also about the native from Venezuela. Okay, so practically what my interest is also, you know, what I was actually very impacted, because you are doing also, you know, giving the voice to the native. And a voice to the nature.
Right. No, exactly. Oh, you make me laugh. You're already one of my favorite people I've ever met, Magdalena. I'm so glad we're connected.
Listen, yeah, for Maine, even I am not originally, but I'm claiming Maine as my hometown in U.S.
We're proud to have you.
Well, thank you. Well, see, Kevin, I am so happy. I actually survived. I thought it would be worse, but I'm so happy. But listen, I'm so excited that, you know, we had this such great information. And let me know if I can help you with that information, because I look, like I said, I wanted to talk to you later on also, maybe how we can actually go with this apology, you know, and how we can actually help, you know, create something together. And I would actually like to know more also about what you just talked about, you know, about North Carolina, and actually share with other communities. Because the more we help each other or actually learn about each other, we are just supporting each other.
Correct. There's a lot of really positive energy out there in the world today. And I think that
yes.
As that energy links up, it gains momentum and power. So thank you. And I'd love to look at all of those opportunities with you.
Absolutely. Also, Kevin, I would love to actually finish. You were talking about the Lakota tribe, and it says here, the Lakota were a strong many moons ago when the individual was powerful. The personal power was deconstructed by the reservation system, overwhelming with dehumanizing and bureaucratic control. But what is lost can be found. Of his the Ogla Holy Man Black Elk foretold. I like this. Some who know the Lakota old ways say there is a seventh power. That makes me cry. Do you want to go further from here?
I do. I love that. Please. Thank you for that reading. Yes, the sacred Lakota icon is the medicine wheel, mm-hmm. and it contains six sacred powers: the power of the West, the North, the East, the South, the Sky, and the Earth. There are two lines running, one running horizontal and the other vertical through that medicine wheel. At the center, there is an intersection, and I once heard a wise Lakota elder at Pine Ridge tell me that at the center of that sacred medicine wheel lives a seventh power, which is the power of the individual human spirit. And that while we are impacted by the powers around us, that we too have power, and that our actions and our thoughts impact the system as a whole. And so the seventh power, I came to believe, is the future, the way forward for the Oglala Sioux tribe and the people of Pine Ridge. It's a return to the realization that they are strong, that each individual is strong, and that despite the external conditions of their past, that they hold within them all of the power that they need to make a move, to move forward as a community, and that this is true for all humans, that the Absolutely. Seventh power is the way forward. So I ended up, I have a nonprofit that does work at Pine Ridge, and I named it the Seventh Power, and my publishing company is called the Seventh Power Press, in tribute to the power, the ultimate power of the human spirit.
Wow. I just wanted to finish with that line. I absolutely loved it, and I said, I have to bring this to the end. So, Kevin, listen, that was such a pleasure, you know, to share this story and meet you, and thank you so much for sharing. And also, I just wanted to thank you, your whole family, for supporting you. Thank you for the lumber, you know, for your company, Hancock Lumber, for supporting, and to you, all your employees. And, man, I love you guys.
And I want to I'd just like to quickly thank you, Magdalena, for all you do to give a stronger voice to others and to the voice of the human soul. Thank you for everything you do.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Bye-bye. Good night, everybody. Thank you. Bye-bye.